It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys of law here on the Talk Station. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
All right. So what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, last week, we've decided to take a couple of weeks here and discuss different kinds of statute of limitations. These are limitations, if you will, that are headlined in our North Carolina general statutes.
Right.
That dictate, Ben, when you as a person or corporation or business must bring your cause of action.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we mentioned last week is that, you know, the law is just not going to sit idly by and wait years and years and years and years for one to come forward and assert their cause of action. And the purpose of this general rule or this general legal philosophy is that witnesses' memories fade, documents disappear, evidence is not as fresh, it is not as reliable, and of course, as we all know, we want our courts to be a place of you know, to strive for those places of justice and equality, and of course, you know, the truth. And of course, those are all concepts that we strive for, but they begin with something as fundamental as just, you know, when did the witness see what they see?
Right.
When did they hear what they heard? These kinds of things are more reliable when they are within, you know, a reasonable amount of time of them happening, and not 10 or 15 years later.
You know, I think a common perception, Wes, is that the wheels of justice turn very slowly until they turn against you. and then you wish you had a little more time.
Yeah, that's right. That's a good way to put it, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week we kind of led up to contracts, and I think that's when we ran out of time. We were talking about the statute of limitations relative to contract cases.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't, there's really three relevant statutes that would address the how long you can wait before you need to bring an action for breach of contract.
Okay.
I mean,
right.
Let's say, you know, someone owes you money on a contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how long can you wait before you have to bring the actual lawsuit for collection of that? That's kind of the basic example.
Sure.
There.
Okay.
And what we mentioned was action for breach of contract for the sale of goods.
Mm-hmm.
That falls under the Uniform Commercial Code, and that's a 4-year statute of limitations, and then just your standard statute of limitations for any other type of contract is 3-year.
Mm-hmm.
That could be written, it could be verbal, it could be an implied contract, like a contract by, implication by maybe the conduct of the parties, that
right,
type of thing.
Right. Now, would services fall under that too? Goods is hard goods, but services would be
correct
under the 3-year.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a good example would be, you know, let's say a general contractor does work on a house and is not paid. Well, as we talked about last week, that general contractor would have a right to put a lien on that property within 120 days of the last day that work was done.
Right.
But then they have to file a lawsuit within 180 days in order to perfect that lien and keep a cloud on the title of the respective piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really short, 120, 180. But let's say that they failed to do that. Let's say that they didn't get to the lawyer early enough. They were busy. Understandable.
Right. Right.
They still have a 3-year period of time under breach of contract in the event that the property owner has not paid them under their contract.
But those are slightly different actions, or are they?
Well, I mean, normally when you're bringing an action to perfect a lien, mechanics and materialman's lien, you're going to also bring a breach of contract claim. It's going to be one and the same. Now, this relatively short, but kind of standard statute of limitations of 3 years is lengthened significantly in the event that we have a document under seal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks getting a mortgage, folks signing bank documents, you may have noticed before that on the documents they sign, there's the word S-E-A-L, seal on it.
Right.
I adopt this word seal as my seal, or it's stamped with a seal and indicates it's executed under seal.
Often it's just a word that's under the signature line or something, right?
This day and age, it is, of course, you know, just usually typewritten in and around the signature line.
Right.
And as Wes just said, the word, the letters S-E-A-L.
Okay.
That in and of itself, even though it's just typewritten, very generic here, very simple, that is under law now a signature under seal. If it says it's under seal, typewritten word by the signature saying it's under seal, then it is. This is important to know, Ben, because folks really don't understand what it means this day and time in the modern age, what it means to have a signature under seal, because of course we all remember how it used to be that you actually would have a seal, you know, back in from our jurisprudence of hundreds and hundreds of years ago,
right.
Everyone had a seal.
Actually sealed with
and
wax.
They would seal it. Okay. Yes. We, of course, don't require that now. In 2016, we just require that the letters that they accompany the signature.
But it still has that weight, though.
Yes, it does.
Right. So that's what we're talking about.
Right, and you know, when you see the word seal on such a document, that creates a rebuttable presumption that it was in fact executed under seal. We have had cases before where the document was a little sloppy and it indicates seal on it, but it doesn't indicate anywhere in the document that it was in fact I adopt this word seal as my seal. So then I know we're getting it kind of splitting hairs here, but then we get into the issue of, did this person really adopt it under seal or executed under seal? And there's some, you know, cases in North Carolina and other jurisdictions that indicate that you have to have some specific language in the document to adopt the seal itself. So why does all this matter? Why are we talking about seal so much? Well, it matters because the statute of limitations on a document under seal extends all the way to 10 years.
Huh. Really?
Okay, instead of 3, it's 10. So, you know, in the event a promissory note is signed, which a standard bar form promissory note, in most promissory notes that you see, especially ones, of course, you would sign with a financial institution, bank, lender, so on and so forth, is certainly going to be executed under seal. So in the event there's a default on that particular document, a default on that loan, so to speak, then the lending institution or the holder of that note may wait more than 3 years to sue you on it. They may wait, you know, up to 10 years to sue you for collection, you know, on that.
Right.
If you're the same thing, if you're the holder of a note, if you're the holder of the paper and it's under seal and someone has breached this document, then you would be able to wait, you know, up to 10 years and still have a valid lawsuit that would not be subject to a motion to dismiss for statute of limitations as long as, you know, you're within that 10-year period of time. And the 10 years is going to run from when? Default.
Okay.
Okay. It's not going to run from the date of the document.
Right.
It's going to run from...
Or the date of the activity.
That's right. It's going to run... It's going to run... Exactly. It's going to run from... the default, or in a promissory note context, it would run from the last payment. So that's also important for folks who are the owers, the obligors out there.
Well, you know, let me run an example by just to say I had somebody paint the house.
Right.
So I had a contract. I signed a contract with them to paint the house. And then I made payments to them, but then I didn't make the last payment.
Right.
So... at what point is it a default, or is it from that last payment date? Is that signed under seal?
It would be from not the last payment. It would be from the default, which is when you failed to make a payment.
Okay.
So you failed at some point in time to do something under the terms of the contract, and boom, that's when your date starts.
Yeah, maybe the arrangement was a monthly payment. So
Now it might be a factual issue there about when you. In fact, defaulted, but there's a 10-year period of time if it's under seal.
Another but if it was not, it would just be three.
It'd be three. And this, you know, I've referred to bank documents, promissory notes, but it really can be, you know, any kind of contract. You know, I mean, when we're preparing, you know, settlement agreements, for example, when we're preparing buy-sell agreements, when we're preparing all the various different kinds of, you know, contracts, shareholders agreements, any of these type documents that we prepare, you know, we as the attorney, of course, we take this into consideration. And in almost every situation, we're going to prepare this document under seal and make sure that it's under seal so that the parties would have a 10-year right to file suit in the event of default under the document. So
most of your boilerplate forms, Ben, you know, when you buy a car, when you set up an account at Best Buy, you know, Lowe's, you know, you have these pages and they tear one off and give you one. Okay. Well, most likely those documents, not always, but most likely they also are under seal. Again, you have to look for those letters.
Okay. All right. Again, we're talking about statute of limitations. And if you have questions you would like to call in about your legal life, you can call us now.
Call me at 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 and 353-4674.
And we'll have more to come in just a moment. Welcome back here on a Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Every Tuesday morning, we bring you Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. We're talking about the statute of limitations, and especially on the commercial contract side, right?
Yeah, we talked about under seal, less than 10-year period of time. And, you know, kind of the flip side on that would be that, I mean, let's say that you're the obligor, you're the individual who's having to make, you know, the payments.
Right.
Well, you know, if you're concerned about being in default of, let's say, you know, that credit card or that bank loan or whatever it ends up being. I mean, most cases it's going to be under seal. But, you know, in the event that you haven't made a payment in, you know, 3 years, and let's say it's not a document under seal, just depends on circumstances. Well, I mean, if you make a partial payment at that point in time, you know, $50 or whatever on it, you've revived the entire statute of limitations as far as, you know, the lender being able to go back and collect.
Oh, really?
So sometimes you're better off just to continue to stay in default so the statute will run and you could use it as a defense in the event that, you know,
In other words, if you make a payment, it restarts the clock?
Revives it.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Because, you know, the lender would only be able to look back during the statute of limitations period, you know, for collection if it's like an installment type payment situation.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's the way that works. So moving on, we talked about contracts being the 4-year, 3-year, and the 10-year under seal. But let's talk, you know, about corporations briefly. This one is, we don't see it a whole lot, but it is good for folks to know. Action against corporate directors for unlawful distribution.
Right.
You know, this would be a situation where, let's say that you're a shareholder and, you know, you get the financial records from the corporation, and this could be a closely held corporation. It could be a business you are part owner in. It could be, you know, really anything. It could be a larger company.
Right.
It could be something that you inherited an ownership interest through the family. It could be the family farm. Could be, you know, any of these things. So in the event that you find that, let's say the board of directors are making inequitable distributions, maybe to certain shareholders, but not other shareholders.
Right.
You know, kind of taking care of their own, but leaving you out, that type thing. Well, you only have a 3-year period of time in order to address that particular issue. Really just a wrongful, distribution. So again, that's not something that we deal with.
When does that clock start?
At the time that you would discover that there would be you know, an act of malfeasance.
Okay, so at the time of discovery. Okay, all right. But like you said, it's doesn't come up very often, but a lot of people sit on corporate boards, or they may be, you know, one way or another, they need to remember.
Yeah. When does it run?
Well, when you talk about the wrongful distribution, I mean, really the statutes regarding corporations require for information regarding the corporation, so as far as financial information,
mm-hmm.
financial statements, profit and loss statements, balance sheets,
mm-hmm.
to be provided really on an annual basis to the shareholders. Now, that right. usually doesn't happen, but there's not any penalty for not doing that unless there's a proper request from the shareholder. So let's say the shareholder requests this information,
mm-hmm.
and then the request, you know, shows that we see a wrongful distribution. That statute would actually run from the time of the distribution, but mm-hmm. it's kind of incumbent upon the shareholder to ask for information to see when distributions were made.
Okay.
Because you have a right under the statute mm-hmm. to see how your corporation's being operated.
Yes.
So all you have to do is ask for it.
Right.
It technically is saying from the date on which effect of distribution measured.
Okay.
So
all right.
at the time that the distribution was due and yet not paid, wrongfully mm-hmm. unpaid, that's really when the action would begin to accrue.
Okay. All right. All right. Then from there, so that one's fairly yep. rare. So what else?
All right. So
yep. while we're talking about, you know, judgments, let's just skip to this one very quickly. I've had some experience with this one lately. It's 10 years from the date of rendition of the judgment. So in other words, you know, you get a judgment, maybe one of these small claims judgments that mm-hmm. we've talked about, you know,
right.
it's on record. Okay. It sits there, for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, and so that's how long mm-hmm. a judgment would be good.
Again, a lot of people may think they're never going to collect, but if they keep their eyes open for 10 years.
It's astonishing how yeah. life, the twists and turns, as we sometimes use the expression here on the show, mm-hmm. you know, catch up. We're doing a judgment. We're paying a judgment on a case right now, not in full, but in part. And, you know, the judgment's about 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The party who is liable for the judgment, she didn't even know it was there.
Right.
You know, came up in a title search on her mother's property that she has a small interest in.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are now at the closing table having to deal with that judgment from a situation that was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The judgment, though, is only about 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's enforceable and it's got to be dealt with.
From the time that judgment is rendered.
From the time right. the judgment is rendered. And
yeah.
also, although our form here doesn't say it, there are statutes in North Carolina that, of course, allow you to renew the judgment.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Okay,
right.
for an additional period of time.
Okay.
So we lawyers not only have to look at the rendition date, mm-hmm. but we then have to look to see if there's been a renewal.
Statute of limitations is the subject, but if you'd like to ask a question about your legal life, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, or 353-4674. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, talking about statute of limitations and how they can actually, with judgments, can be renewed. Right?
Yeah, Wes and I were speaking during the break, and our recollection of the law is that, as we've just said, a judgment is always good for the first 10 years after rendition,
mm-hmm.
from the date of rendition forward. And if you come forward, you know, in like, say, the 10th year, the 9th year, really, you know, before the judgment
right.
Would run the full 10 years, we believe that in the state of North Carolina, you're able to renew it without any kind of complication for an additional 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. And after that, Wes and I both said to each other, we think we have to go yeah. to the law book
right.
and see exactly what happens after
Haven't
that.
Had that experience.
What the conditions might be. Yeah. There could be some conditions at that point
mm-hmm.
that say that, you know, well, why have you not been able to collect this within 20 years? What have the circumstances been? Something that would be a test to make you, to allow you to renew it again.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd have to look that part up.
Right. So there's an interesting dynamic here between, you know, the statute of limitations for 10 years on collecting a judgment and then the statute of limitations on the underlying claim.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go to court to recover a judgment, you know, it could be back rent that hadn't been paid, You know, it could be breach of contract, like we were talking about, a negligence claim, any of these type claims, but you're going to have an underlying claim that has a statute of limitations that's probably much less than 10 years, unless it's a document under seal, like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes potential litigants get into, you know, kind of a cost benefit analysis because although they may have a great claim, you know, they don't know if they can collect it.
Right.
However, if you let that statute of limitations run, let's say the standard 3 year on negligence or standard 3 year on contract, then once that's run, that short period of time, 3 years, then you're forever barred to bring that action in court. You're done. You're never going to collect. So, you know, in many cases, although we don't think we can collect now, we bring the action now because it's within the statute of limitations, might not even get much of a defense against the other side if they think they're judgment proof.
Right.
And then we get our judgment, and then we have a 10-year period of time to collect it. Mm-hmm. Now, while that judgment is there on the books, it is accruing interest at 8%, which is a pretty good rate of return here in 2016.
Yes.
So, I mean, I can't tell you how many cases we've had where we've gotten judgments in that type situation, and then years later, someone has passed away. Someone has inherited something. Someone is wanting to borrow money to buy a house.
Right.
Or let's say that we wait 5 years or so, and then we seek collection on the judgment on behalf of our client. We file the appropriate notices and seek recovery through the a petition for execution, and we're able to collect at that point in time. But we have to do so, you know, within that 10-year period of time. So, you know, we've got lots of judgments that we've gotten over the years that are in our clients' files, and, you know, we monitor them.
Right.
And, you know, it's nice when you go to work one day and the check comes in the mail for one of your clients that you represented 6 years ago on something, payment in full for a judgment we got a long time ago. I love making those phone calls to clients.
That's right.
Guess what?
That's found
money. You got
money.
Your check for it.
So. Now, what about, and I'm about to wrap it up here, but what about, let's take the Bernie Madoff kind of case where cheated out of a lot of, people are cheated out of a lot of money, but there's a criminal side to that too, and he's thrown in jail. Does that alter the clock?
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's going to be obviously...
in his case, there's an agreement, but...
Yeah, there would be statute of limitations relative to the criminal claims, most of those probably being 3 years. I don't know. It would be under... New York law, in that case.
And I believe also, though, in that particular file, that didn't all of the claims get consolidated into the bankruptcy, into the trustee.
But if you
maybe
had somebody
not
that,
so much the bankruptcy, just the trustee that the receiver that was appointed.
But there's a phrase that I know that's used sometime that maybe we can get into next week. Tolling. We see that come up. So we'll talk about that too. As we continue to talk about statute of limitations, if you want to find out more from Harvell and Collins, you can call and make an appointment with them at 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050. And they're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.